their, you know, various engagements in devotional service, because many times the problem arises that rather than becoming attached to the service, which is supposed to be directed for the to the pleasure of Krishna, following the principles of Uttama Bhakti, Anukulena Krishnano Shilanam, rather than following that principle and adhering to the substance of what spiritual life is supposed to be all about, very often it is seen that devotees become, rather than being attached to the service, attached to the positions, attached to the facilities, you know, to, let's say, amass empire and, you know, what is it called, influential, let's say, situations to on the basis of a rather exploitive mentality, which just means that the false egoism of the soul has yet to be completely purified. So that's one thing to look out for, you know, in our own lives, and in certain respects it has to be something to look out for in the matter of cultivating sadhu sangha, to find out persons who are actually satam, not asatam, those who are actually attached. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that even the Prakriti Bhaktas, those who are externally oriented, who are dependent on externals, and because of their tendency to be overly dependent on externals, they're called as materialistic devotees. That their association should be shunned by the practicing Madhyamadhikari, especially. Because the Madhyamadhikari, he has to be careful to associate himself favorably with elements which will ensure his progress to the perfectional stage of bhava, siddhi, and prema. So, because many times such Prakriti Bhaktas will be seen as what is known as Dharma Dwaji, which means they wave the flag of devotion, or on the pretext of devotion, they engage in the pursuit of mundane material desires. So that's a danger. We should be a little careful, not a little careful, extremely careful, especially the managers of this movement and the leaders of this movement should be extremely careful in the matter of attending their own spiritual progress, and also in the matter of setting proper example to create faith and inspiration in the hearts of devotees who need that example in their lives, who require, neophytes especially, require to draw strength from the good association and the good example of others. This reminds me, if you don't mind my making this point, driving it home a little bit. In my personal life, in the beginning of my devotional service, I was attached to the vanity of being one of Srila Prabhupada's stalwart book distributors. And I distributed books for a good many years, at least 8 or 9 years. I was out there distributing books. So, in 1983, when I came to India to gather together some festival paraphernalia for my Harinam festival program in America, in New York, I was trying to arrange for the paraphernalia to be shipped back to America, and I met with one life member who happened to be in charge of the cargo section of the Phalam Airport, which was International Airport at that time. And so, anyway, he invited me to his house, and I did kirtan there with their family, and I noticed that there was a little dog running around the house. So I figured that anyone who was keeping a dog in their house couldn't be very strictly following the regulative principles, you know, perhaps even because he was Bengali, maybe he's eating fish or something, who knows, because dogs are meat eaters, you know, so they have a dog running around your house means that you must be handling some, you know, kind of disgusting substances. So I refused to take anything but some uncut fruit. Prabhupada told to Achyutananda, or Swami, that even if one is, this is because Achyutananda and various others here in India were engaged in enlisting life members. So Prabhupada told to Achyutananda, who told me what Prabhupada had said to him, that that even a life member, he may be life member, but if he's not chanting minimum of 16 rounds daily and following the four regulative principles, we should be careful not even to accept water from him. We should be careful not even to accept water from him. Many times the life membership devotees, they would go to people's homes and they would agree to accept the prasad offered by them only if they got the donation, in order to induce them to get the donation. But that was kind of like a trick. You know, sadhu will eat, you know, only if you agree to become a member of the society, ISKCON society. But Prabhupada, you know, at least in the incident described in his instruction to Achyutananda, he didn't encourage that, but encouraged us to be rather strict. So, but I, just because, you know, I'm kind of soft-hearted in that way, I agreed to accept some cut fruit from him. But the reason why I'm bringing this up is because that night I slept outside in the courtyard, and I had a dream where Prabhupada comes to me in a dream, and he says, "Indra, what are you doing?" Because it was the first time that I ever slept off of, let's say, legitimate ISKCON-controlled property. Even in America, we would pay rent to motels or whatever. So in that sense, because we're paying rent and establishing a temple as such in the motel room and doing our morning program, etc., in the motel room, so it is legitimate. But this time I was like the first time in 8, 9, 10 years or so that I had slept off of Prabhupada's legitimate, you know, property. So Prabhupada came to me in a dream and he said, what are you doing? And then I began to enthusiastically describe to him how I was making a Harinam Sankirtan festival program. And then as I was saying that, suddenly it dawned on me that I'd given up my book distribution in the presence of Prabhupada when he was saying like that. And then I started enthusiastically, you know, explaining about my project. It just kind of like overwhelmingly dawned on me that I'd given up my, you know, most important number one priority service to Srila Prabhupada of assisting him in his doubling and redoubling book distribution as we'd done in previous years. So I immediately broke down and started crying. And Srila Prabhupada, he took my head on his shoulder. Of course, this is just a dream, right? But it was real to me. I don't know if you ever had such dreams, but he took my head on his shoulder and he was patting me on the head and was telling me that it's okay. You do it very nicely. So he was encouraging me to do my Harinam festival program and that I should do it very nicely because he knew my intentions. My intentions were to at least make some kind of small, humble attempt to revitalize Harinam Sankirtan, which had been so terribly neglected all over our society for so many years. You know, so, and still I'm trying to do something in that regard in my humble way. I don't know how effective it is. Anyway, let's not get distracted from the point of discussion. So, surprisingly, many years later, Srila Prabhupada again reappeared. So many times he reappeared in dreams to me and giving me extremely valuable instructions concerning my personal cultivation of spiritual life and concerning the progress of our society. So, about 2 years ago, Srila Prabhupada, he appeared suddenly in my dream quantum and told me, he opened by saying, Indra, actually, book distribution is not enough. Now this came to me as a shocker to hear it from Srila Prabhupada because it probably is, you know, disbelievable by many devotees who would hear me say such a thing. Because I remember Srila Prabhupada as that person who tirelessly, relentedly, you know, waking up so early in the night or, you know, at 12 o'clock and dedicating his whole life to the translations of his books and and so vigorously whipping us, you know, in the matter of book publication and book distribution. So to hear Prabhupada saying that kind of set me aback. But if you will carefully analyze or listen to what else he said with respect to that, then you'll understand and see how it's perfectly in accord with the decision of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who also told Srila Prabhupada that if you ever get money, print books. Prabhupada told me, he says, actually, book distribution is not enough. Our real business, and this also blows some people away, our real business is to become Bhajananandi. Now you may, I'm saying this in front of Srila Prabhupada, in front of the deities, I'm not making it up. And it's not something which is, you know, just some figment of my imagination, you know, manifesting like, you know, sky flowers or banana hairs or horse eggs or something like that. Prabhupada actually, you know, said these things to me via media, his transcendental system of instructing his disciples personally after his physical departure. He said, listen to it carefully, actually book distribution is not enough. Our real business is to become Bhajan Anandi. And by our personal example, encourage as many others as possible to also become Bhajananandi. Book distribution simply facilitates this. Those are Prabhupada's instructions to me. Now, if you analyze that, this is an interesting thing. By our personal example, actually book distribution is not enough. Our real business is to become Bhajan Anandi. There are five platforms, or at least four platforms, of realization of the Absolute Truth. There's the Anamoy platform, just like the puppy dog or the baby is immediately attached to the mother's breast. And he realizes truth in the consumption of food. So the symptom of this anamoy consciousness is manifest in the consumer society wherein economic development becomes the prominent, let's say, important aspect of human life, so-called human life. Then beyond that, there's pranamoy. So the pranamoy existence is characterized by defense. So we should please mark the purpose of this discussion in relationship to the problem of becoming materially attached to the should be recognized as spiritual facilities of an institution. When we become attached to economic development, Prabhupada used to call that as defense fund, to have one's own personal bank account, etc. He was saying in relationship to sannyasis keeping the personal bank account. So, economic development, so that we can fill our bellies nicely, pay the electric bills so that we can have nice fan and all these things, you know, for the comforts of the physical body, But we should question, are we eating to live, or are we living to eat? Are we engaging in devotional service so that we can have the facility of nice eating and nice sleeping arrangements? Making a show of devotional service just enough to get by? Or are we taking these facilities so that we can live by boldly preaching Krishna consciousness by our personal example? Our personal example. Bringing others beyond the Anamoy platform, the Pranamoy platform, the Gyanamoy platform by which one, which is characterized by our tendency to rationalize our existence, rationalize, you know, or justify our, you know, motivations, our purposes, you know. The defense of the Pranamoy platform is characterized by trying to maintain our position at all cost, etc., so that we can have the facility to exploit it in various ways for varieties of self-aggrandizement. But to go beyond all these to the Anandamoy platform. So the Anandamoy platform is the platform of pure devotional service, wherein one is actually linked up. Yoga means to link up with Krishna's antaranga shaktis, with Krishna's ladini shakti, ananda shakti, via media, the influence of bhakti, coming through the association of the Sadguru and the Shuddha Bhaktas, Sangha. So this Anandamoy platform, any Ananda is better than no Ananda. So many times Srila Prabhupada harped on becoming Gosti Anandi. But we should understand what is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's decision, his definition of Gosthyanandi. What is Jiva Goswami's definition of Gosthyanandi? Jiva Goswami defines Gosthyanandi as a bhajananandi who likes to share his realizations amongst the family members. Ghost means family. So one who takes, experiences Ananda by Ananda means on the Anandamoy platform. One who experiences Ananda relishes the spiritual substance, association with the spiritual substance. Mahatmanastumam partam daivim prakriti ashrita, taking shelter of Krishna's, his internal pleasure potency, Shrimati Radharani, Shrimati Lalita Devi, Shrimati Rupa Manjari, Shrimati Ananga Manjari, etc., and various other expansions of Radharani who let's say, dispense the privilege of pure devotional service. So to take shelter of them, you know, the Anandamoy platform. Any kind of Ananda is better than Nirananda. So when we say Gosti Anandi, Bhaktisiddhanta defines Gosti Anandi. He says that the best Gosti Anandi is the Bhajananandi who preaches. And as far as preaching is concerned, example is higher than precept. Example is more powerful than precept. Prabhupada wanted every one of us to become acharya. Every one of his disciples is meant to become acharya. Maybe not as an institutional head, but to preach by his own personal example, by his own absorption in the Anandamoy pursuit of prema. So we should take stock. What are we actually doing with our life? Are we becoming, you know, like the residents of Braja, who are 100% unconditionally selfless and self-giving in their endeavors to please Krishna? Krishnendriya priti ichchat gari premanam. So, or, you know, are we putting on the guise, wearing tilak, shaved head, or dhoti, or, you know, keeping the sika, you know, or keeping, wearing nice sari, keeping your head covered, especially if you're married, and all these things. Are we doing all these things, you know, and maintaining the Kali Chela mood of exploiting the resources of Srila Prabhupada's, you know, the form of the institution? We should always remember that form is only real form when the form is based on the substance or the spirit. It's an important thing to understand. Sometimes devotees, they want to, let's say, completely segregate form and substance by saying that we're not interested in form, that we're interested in substance. The substance of the spirit of pure devotional service. In some ways that's true, but we should only understand that we're disinterested in form when form departs from, you know, the substance of pure devotional service. Then it's only show bottle. It looks like a massive international society, you know, of devotees. but we might question, you know, to the degree that we've actually inculcated the substance of pure devotional prema in our own hearts, even inculcated the substance of the essentially pure name of Krishna within our heart. Is the pure name of Krishna dancing on our tongues? We should think seriously. You know, what are we doing? Why is the pure name of Krishna not dancing on our tongue? If only the semblance of the name of Krishna, Namavas, is dancing on our tongue, or the offended name of Krishna is dancing on our tongue, then we should question to what extent we personally are contributing to the real form of the Krishna consciousness movement. Those who chant the semblance of Nam, that means even on the clearing stage, to be real, according to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they are Vaishnava Abhas. They're semblance of a Vaishnava. They're not actually Vaishnava. And shouldn't be proudly thinking that I am a Vaishnava. That is the same false pride which is exhibited in this incident of Indra's retaliating against Krishna's omission of his yajna. The same false pride coming out in a different way. I am a Vaishnava. Who is a Vaishnava? Only he who is chanting the pure name can be said to be a Vaishnava of sorts. And then from the stage of Ruchi, when one is chanting the pure name, it is to be seen what are the symptoms. Not Dhanam, not Janam, not Sundarim, Kavitam. He has no taste for any other thing than the chanting of the name. That is the beginning of the chanting of the pure name, at which time the sarup of Krishna is revealed. There's a gradual progression from ruchi to asakti to bhav to prema and onward, which is beyond our, you know, ability to even really conceive of in the matter of mahabhava. Just like we can describe so many things about Srimati Radharani or Srimati Lalita Devi, but the words can come on our tongue. We may even be chanting the pure name, but if we've not gone there and experienced the things, whatever we say is basically so much verbiage. We can say so many things, just like I can say Mahabhav Sarupini Srimati Radharani Ki Jai. What do I understand of the subject matter? You know, who is relishing Mahabhav of some variety or another can even begin to understand something of Srimati Radharani's Mahabhav. And even that is beyond. Lalita Devi cannot understand Radharani's Mahabhav. Because Radharani experiences a variety of Mahabhav which is beyond the ability of any of her expanded forms to experience. So Lalita Devi, Vishakha Devi, and even the Manjaris, they all, those in Radharani's group, can experience Mahabhav. Even Subal Sakha, he's the only Sakha, and his followers, you know, they can also experience a variety of Mahabhav, almost on the level of Madhurya Ras, as intimate boyfriends of Krishna. Just as Subal Sakha is the Sakha Sarup, or the Sakha expansion of Srimati Radharani, so Madhu Mangala is the Sakha expansion of Srimati Lalita Devi. So anyway, we should take stock and understand. Are we actually pursuing the path of Prema Dharma? Or are we spreading a semblance of the atmosphere of devotional service? You know, by our personal influence. Sadhu Sangha means that when you come into the Sadhu's association, you're brought to the point of pure devotional surrender. And you shouldn't expect otherwise. So it's extremely important be freed of the unduly high estimation of oneself in order to humbly chant the pure name. As far as Srimati Lalita Devi is concerned, since the Lalita Shasti is mentioned in our calendar, personally I request if anyone knows the reason why this is Lalita Shasti is mentioned in our calendar, because as far as I know, Lalita Shasti being only 2 days before Radharani's appearance day was a conclusion that Lalita's appearance day being only 2 days on the Shasti instead of the is the conclusion of one Narayan Bhatta Goswami, who was the founder of the Sriji Mandir in Varshana. So I don't know how his conclusion has come to be accepted by our line, but anyway, according to Radhakrishna Ganadesh Deepika, it's described that Lalita Devi is 27 days older than Srimati Radharani. So maybe that is a description of her age in the Nitya Leelas, and somehow or other, for some reason, you know, in the Bhauma Leelas, she made her divine appearance. You know, she was a little detained or something due to some seva, you know, in the Nitya Leelas, and could only make it in time to come 2 days prior to the appearance of Srimati Radharani or something. I don't know. If someone knows, then, you know, feel free to explain the thing to me. But anyway, we accept the authority of Kavi Kanapur in his... Is it Kavi Kanapur? No. Anyway. No, it's who is it? Rupa Goswami? Radhakrishna Ganadesh Deepika. Gaur Ganadesh Deepika is Kavi Kanapur. Who is Radhakrishna Ganadesh Deepika? Is Rupa? Can't remember. Rupa Goswami, right? So, anyway, 27 days older. So, we don't have much time. I had some things to read, but it would take considerable time, I guess. So I'm just going to continue to shoot from the hip, you know, and maybe we'll hit a few and miss a few. So, Lalita Devi, being older than Srimati Radharani, she many times acts as the instructing guru of Srimati Radharani. She has a nature which is called as Vama Prakara. Prakara means that she's very harsh. Vama means that she's contrary. There's the Vama gopis, and they're the Dakshin gopis, who are submissive. So the contrary gopis, Radharani is Vama Madhya. There's Prakara, Madhya, and Ridvi. Prakara means that she's very bold and harsh, and Ridvi means that she's very soft, and you could say reserved. And Madhya means that she's situated between and can sometimes, let's say, sway toward the harsh side and sometimes sway toward the soft side. Lalita Devi is very bold and arrogant in her, let's say, Anandamoy sevas of the divine couple. Many times she will instigate and perpetuate Srimati Radharani's man. Her man means her jealous anger toward Krishna. Even to the point, as described in Vidagdha Madhava, that Srimati Radharani, she becomes tired of pretending to be angry at Krishna. And she becomes listless and anxiety-ridden. Because after all, we should, it is useful to mark in this connection, in terms of the of understanding scientifically Radha and Krishna's lilas in the realm of Braja, because Braja Dham is the Vipralamba Mai Lilastan. All the lilas are, you can say, laced with the essence of Vipralamba Prema. Even the apparent Sambhog Lilas are also pervaded with Vipralamba. So as such, in the realm of Braja, there's need for the action of what is termed as Viyogini Shakti. There are three principal shaktis that are acting in the matter of Radha and Krishna's amorous sports in Vrindavan, from Radharani's side. The principal shakti is Ladini Shakti, which is the pleasure potency. It is the supreme shakti, which is to be enjoyed by Krishna. But in order to enhance Krishna's relishment of this quintessential shakti, Ladini Shakti, two other shaktis act to serve the purposes of that Ladini Shakti. Ladini Shakti Radha, Putrita Kirti, Kirtita Putri Radha is described in the Padma Purana. Patalkanda is described that that she, being the enjoyable of Krishna, is served by Viyogini. Viyog means that that which serves to create separation, and Samyog means that which serves to create the complete union of the divine couple. So the Viyogini Radha and the Samyogini Radha, they are subordinate personalities or aspects of Radha's multifaceted personality. which are included within herself, very much in the same way that Vasudeva Krishna and other subordinate features of Vishnu Tattva are included within the body of Krishna. So the Vyogini Radha serves by creating a distance between Ladini Shakti Radha and Vrijendanandan Krishna. The necessity is to make Krishna work hard for his money, because if someone works hard for something, he appreciates it more. You know, a battle which is won after a great struggle, you know, is all the more, you can say, victorious. In other words, victory is all the more relishable by the struggle in a great battle. So the battle of cupidity between Srimati Radharani and Krishna is greatly enhanced by the action of Vyogini Shakti. By creating that difficulty in the matter of Krishna's obtaining his desirables, simultaneously it increases the intensity of the bhav, or the mahabhav, in Srimati Radharani, which is relished by Krishna, but also is a matter of the delight in Srimati Radharani's heart. So the more the intense the manifestation of bhakti, the more Krishna, Radharani and Krishna relish their pleasure pastimes. So when necessary to augment the pleasure in Radha and Krishna's lilas, some yogini, the Vyogini Shakti, acts in various ways to create the Vipralamba situation in Radha and Krishna's hearts, so that they can, let's say, increase the transcendentally ever-increasing bliss of their pleasure pastimes. And the Samyogini Shakti serves to when the time is ripe, you know, that Shakti in Radha serves to bring the Ladini Shakti into the purview of Krishna's transcendental senses, you know, for his pleasure. So the reason why we're bringing this up is because the different sakis, there are, I don't know if any of, how many of you will be able to make use of this information, but nevertheless, we'll speak for another few minutes before we get interrupted, I guess. So the Vyogini Shakti in Radha is manifest in, or let's say, is enhanced by the actions of Srimati Lalita Devi. In other words, each Sakhi, because their expanded Kaya Bhuha, self-same counterpart manifestations of servitor godhead, they embody different aspects of Srimati Radharani's heart. They embody various aspects of her different bhavas, which she manifests necessarily for the variety which is the mother of Krishna's enjoyment. So each Sakhi has her role to play. There are different types of Sakhis. Some Sakhis are called as left-wing Sakhis, and some Sakhis are right-wing Sakhis. This is not to be confused with left-wing gopis and right-wing gopis. Left-wing gopis and right-wing gopis are naikas. They are seen in terms of their position as group leaders, Yudheshwaris. Just like Radharani is a left-wing gopi, Chandravali is a right-wing gopi, right-wing Yudheshwari. But because there are, let's say, the different gopis, some of them are friendly, Saridpaksha, and others are, let's say, adversaries, or, how do you say it? Rivals. And others are neutrals. These things are all described in detail in Rupa Goswami's Ujjala Nilamani. If you will go through that book, if you have the chance, or if you're bold enough, or if you're anxious enough, you know, to even begin to deserve to go through these literatures to, you know, suss out, you know, your heart's attractions, etc., to the services of Radha and Krishna, then it is most necessary and advisable to do so in order to get a very, strong foothold in the progress of the cultivation of one's desired bhava, both in because in Ujjala Nilamani also there's descriptions of the varieties of sukkas and intimate sukkas and varieties of gopis and sakhis. So anyway, Lalita Devi is a left-wing sakhi. Left-wing sakhi means that, see, a left-wing gopi and right-wing gopi is in terms of their attitude toward Krishna. Because their basic, purpose is to give pleasure to Krishna. But the left-wing sakhi, or the right-wing sakhi, their left-wingness and their right-wingness is based on their attitude in relationship to the divine couples, meeting, etc., in their pleasure pastimes. It's not only in consideration of Krishna's pleasure, but it's in consideration of the requirements for the increased ananda of Radha and Krishna's pastimes. There are five types of sakis: Parampreshta Sakhi. The Parampreshta Sakhis are the Asta Sakhis, of which Lalita Devi is the principal and foremost. She's the first and, you can say, most important of Srimati Radharani's Sakhis. Actually, no one can hope to get the service of Srimati Radharani without being sufficiently blessed by the mercy of Srimati Lalita Devi. Lalita Devi is going throughout Vrindavan Dham, ringing a bell, let's say, and calling that any girl who wants to do even a little service for Srimati Radharani's pleasure, please come and sign up. So she's called as Vamra Prakara. She's very I'd have to look in the book to see exactly which bhava. Maybe I should do it real quick, just to which bhava she represents, just for the information's sake. Kandita is the name of the bhava. Kandita is characterized. Not only is the guru of Radharani, but she's also the guru of all the sakis. And as such, Rupa Manjari, being the Manjari of Lalita Devi, she is the principal Manjari and the guru of all other Manjaris. That's why you will see that although Raghunath Das Goswami is in Krishna Lila is Rati Manjari, we accept him as Rati Manjari. Some say other things, but we prefer to accept him as Srimati Rati Manjari. But it should be noted that Rati Manjari is the Mukhya Manjari of Induleka Devi. Induleka. So, but yet, Sarup Damodar Goswami instructed Raghunath Das Goswami to take shelter at the feet of Rupa, to express the highest principle in the matter of propagating Babalas Rati in this world to the conditioned souls. Babalas Rati refers to that attachment to the babas of the sakhi, where the bhava of the sakhi becomes expanded or illuminated within the heart of the maidservant. Babalas Rati is exclusively the prerogative of the maidservants of Srimati Radharani. That's what marks them as distinct or distinguished from other types of sakis. Because after all, there are five types of sakis. Parampreshta sakis have been described, are the Asta sakis. And Priya Sakhis, they're just under the Asta Sakhis. Both of them are
Radha Krishna, Sama Snehadika, Sakhis, who are equally disposed to both Radha and Krishna. Sometimes they'll take Krishna's side, sometimes they'll take Radharani's side in any argument. And these things can be seen very nicely in books like Sri Krishna Bhavanamrita and Govinda Lilamrita and other Astakalya Lila Granths, if you're so bold as to venture to, you know, poke your nose in those, let's say, restricted areas. So anyway, it's important to understand that because for increasing the pleasure of Krishna, I should finish that other point first before I get into this. Bhavalasrati is the prerogative of the manjaris. So the manjaris are called as Radhika Asamasneyadika, Pran Sakhis and Nitya Sakhis. Primarily the manjaris will follow in the category of the Nitya Sakhis. And general Sakhis are Krishna Asamasneyadika. That means that they have equal, attachment to Radha and Krishna, just like the Radhika Asamasneyadikas, they are also equally attached to Radha and Krishna. One should not make the mistake of thinking that they have no attraction or no attachment to Krishna. That's just an immature assessment of the situation. And sometimes it is explained like that just to kind of, to make the point that there is necessity to regard, you know, the moods of the Sakhi, you know, in Bhavalasrati. But the truth is that there are many varieties. The Manjari Bhav is not, you know, a singular, category. But the Manjaris are of many varieties, from soft to hard, from, mediocre to, not, I don't want to use that word, but to extreme. You know, so anyway, but it should be understood that those who are Radhika Asamasneyadika Sakhis, although they are equally, attached to Radha and Krishna, but their attachment to Krishna is governed. It is governed by their allegiance to Srimati Radharani. Any endeavors, just like you will see that that Rupa Manjari and Rati Manjari, they may enter the Nikunja to do the Prem Sevas at the required time after Srimati Radharani and Krishna have finished their Prem Keli. So we should understand what is the distinction. If someone will casually look at the situation and sees that Rati Manjari is automatically without any tossing of coins or drawing of straws, you know, as to who gets which service, Rati Manjari follows her natural inclination to massage the limbs of Radhika, to relieve her tiredness. But Rupa Manjari, please remember that Rupa Manjari is the head of all the Manjaris, all the Mukhya Manjaris. Ananga Manjari is the head of all the Upa Manjaris. Ananga Manjari is the Upa Manjari of Lalita Devi. So some devotees in the Madhurya Ras, as they will find their highest, say, fulfillment in following the moods of the Mukhya Manjari, and some will find their highest fulfillment in following the moods of the Upa Manjari. Das, 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 no das. Although Ananga Manjari has a special position, being the younger sister of Srimati Radharani, so she is also, you can say, she is the leader of all the Manjaris as well. Rupa Manjari, Rati Manjari, Mani Manjari, Ras Manjari, they all go with Ananga Manjari, following her into the Nikunja to do the Nikunja Sevas at the end of the night, etc., in the Nishant Leelas. So she is considered to be the foremost of all the Manjaris, the topmost. But aside from that discussion, is necessary in the analysis of Rasa Tattva, for what it's worth to you. I hope you are having some, getting something out of this discussion. But in the analysis of Rasa Tattva, whether I should even be discussing it for that matter, but it's Lalita Devi's appearance day, so somehow or other I'm sitting here and I have the inspiration to discuss it. It must be your influence, so I hope if I'm doing anything wrong you'll forgive me. So Rupa Manjari, without drawing straws or flipping coins, she automatically, understanding the innermost heart of Radhika, she goes to serve, to massage the limbs of Radharani's Prananath, Krishna. So at a casual glance, one may think that what is this? You know, I thought that the Manjaris were Radhika, Samasneha, Rikya, Sakis. How is it that Rupa Manjari is going to serve the limbs of Krishna? Maybe she's not a Manjari. Maybe she's just a Sakhi. The Sakis are Krishna, Asamasneha, Rikya. They're equal vision, or their equal attachment to Krishna, is governed by the consideration of Krishna's pleasures, as you know, in contrast to the Manjaris. I mean, the Manjaris, equality toward Radha and Krishna, being governed by Radharani's pleasure. So like that, one may think that, what is this? What are we actually looking at in the service of Krishna? Because she never directly serves Krishna. She only serves the principle of augmenting the pleasure of Srimati Radharani. So when it is said that the Manjaris are never directly enjoyed by Krishna, or they never directly serve Krishna, it doesn't mean that they never have any contact. You know, that their Sarvindriya are never engaged in the Sarvindriya sevas of Krishna. This is another elementary type of presentation of philosophy, which is meant to, dissuade the sadhaka from reverting to the enjoying spirit on the mundane platform, if you understand what I'm just talking about. Because we should not think that we will have any standing whatsoever in cultivating any bhava as long as we're maintaining attachments to the exploitive spirit, which is the very disease condition of the conditioned soul's false purusha abhiman. You know, so it's necessary. So the reason why we're discussing this, just in case you were wondering, is because we should understand that in the cultivation of the Madhurya Bhajan, which is also fostered by Srila Prabhupada's institution, believe it or not, some people think otherwise, but it shouldn't be, let's say, misunderstood, at least by those who were, you know, strongly attached to the sevas of the lotus feet of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada in his group, subgroup, as it were. So it is quite possible to cultivate this Madhurya Bhajan if one's heart is so enchanted by the prospects of the service of the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani in Brajadham. It is not at all impossible. Impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. So, if we're to successfully, bring about the fulfillment or the perfection of that sthaibhav, then we have to take shelter of the persons who are most fit in the matter of helping us to actually achieve our goal. Ultimately, Krishna is the Vishaya Vigraha. Krishna is the only enjoyer. Srimati Radharani is not the Vishaya Vigraha. She's the Ashraya Vigraha. So, taking shelter of the Ashraya Vigraha is for the purpose of facilitating the enjoyment of the Vishaya Vigraha in various ways. So similarly, just as Radharani requires to play hard to get in order to augment the ananda in Krishna's heart upon finally, you know, getting the apple of his eye. So also, all those who are followers in the wake of the services of Srimati Radharani, all those devotees who are following in the footsteps of Srimati Rupa Manjari, Srimati Ananga Manjari, Srimati Lalita Devi, they also require to learn this art of playing hard to get. Krishna, just like you will see, Krishna, he's playing on his flute, calling all the gopis to Vansivat for Maharas. And some of the gopis could not come because they had not yet sufficiently intensified their bhajan. So they did not yet have the adhikar, having not attained the vastu siddhi, or the acquisition, you could say, or full manifestation, as it were, of the Satchidananda spiritual body, Siddhadeha, with which to actually do the Mahabhav Sevas in the Rasmandal. Krishna only dances with the girls, you know, who have attained or who have the Satchidananda Vastu, Siddhadeha. So, but even those that had that spiritual body, when they went to Maharas, what is Krishna doing? He's telling them that you must have come out to see the beauty of the Vrindavan forest, and besides, the duty of the woman is to faithfully serve her husband and take care of the children and all this, you know, please go back home. You know, for kalpas and kalpas, the sages of Dandakaranya had cultivated their rag bhajan to the point where they had actually achieved bhav siddhi and come to the bhoma-lilas of Krishna, to enter into Krishna's pastimes. And they get all the way there. I mean, it's struggle after struggle after struggle after struggle. You know, Krishna's setting up this mayic field in such a way as to make himself difficult to attain. Because the ananda of the emancipated jiva, which is contrasted against the black background of his suffering existence, so-called existence, that ananda, thank you Maharaj for being so patient to listen. I don't know why I'm going on further and further. You're still sitting here. You miss prasad. So, anyhow, you can get food for life if they're still serving it out. By the time we give up our katas. So anyway, the ananda is greatly enhanced in the jiva. Krishna has made it possible for the conditioned souls upon the highest emancipation to experience an enhanced ananda, which even the nitya siddha jivas can never experience. They can only know of it. Even Krishna cannot experience. Even Radhika cannot experience, although she can know of it. Sanatana Goswami describes in Brihat Bhagavatamrita that such emancipated jivas are Krishna's dearest devotees. So, anyway, Krishna is making it difficult, playing hard to get, hard to get, hard to get. Finally you get darshan, and then he disappears and hides behind another bush. And then he peeps out and flutters his flute, and he catches your attention. You go running in that direction, and then he's disappearing behind another bush, you know, or another tree, still further, you know, or behind Govardhan Hill. In so many ways, he's playing hard to get, until finally, you know, he's satisfied that you will not take him cheaply.
Because renounce Krishna once, it's possible to renounce Krishna again. Something which is taken cheaply can easily be thrown away. So Krishna doesn't want to be taken cheaply. Krishna wants to be valued. And to increase our evaluation of his, let's say, qualities, of his pastimes, of his association, of his sevas, etc., he plays hard to get. But there's something beyond that also that you can bear in mind, that at least for the Madhurya Bhaktas, it's essential to understand this principle, that the jiva is very insignificant, vibhanaṃsa, extremely minute. The jiva can easily be swept under the rug or lost in the sauce, so to speak. What will Krishna lose if, you know, one little insignificant minute photon, you know, becomes, lost to him? He doesn't actually lose very much. So, if anybody, you know, should think not to be taken cheaply, it is the emancipated jiva. Krishna doesn't want to be taken cheaply, so he plays hard to get and puts us through so much struggle, so many difficulties, trial and tribulation. But when we get there, we'll have an opportunity to get back at him in a transcendental way. We can also play hard to get in order to enhance the relishment of rasa. We don't want to be taken cheaply either. After all, we have hearts too. It's not only that Krishna has a heart, but we also have hearts. And we also, you know, want to be loved. You know, so it's essential to understand the importance of taking shelter of Srimati Lalita Devi for the purpose of, facilitating the hard-to-getness that the jiva has to be, that the Madhurya Bhakta has to be, in order to, bring about the increments of relishment of rasa in Radha and Krishna. Radharani experiences 10 million times the happiness of her own meeting with Krishna by making the arrangements for her sakis and dasis to meet with Krishna. 10 million times the happiness. So, focusing on Radharani's happiness is the paramount methodology by which the jiva can experience, an unparalleled bliss, unsurpassed bliss. That is the essence of Bhavalas Rati. And to facilitate that bliss, it's just like when Radha and Krishna will meet, at Radhakund in the Madhyana Lila, the midday pastimes. So, when Radha and Krishna will see each other, naturally Krishna has the hankering for for the fulfillment of his desires for associating with Srimati Radharani. So he will, in various ways, on various pretexts, approach Srimati Radharani and try to touch her by grabbing the corner of her sari, or so many things that he may do, you know, as a, let's say, transcendental lumpata. So, but Lalita Devi, she steps in between in her very haughty way, you know, let's say, feigning malice toward Krishna, and says that, "You despicable rake, you know, what the hell do you think you're doing? You know, do you think that our Priya Sakhi is obtainable just for the asking?" Like that. You know, "Get out from here. Go herd your cowherd, you know, your cows with your cowherd boys in the pastures. You know, this place is for, you know, women only, ladies only." So in this way, Lalita Devi serves to create distance, and she delights in that. She delights her prakara mood, you know, it becomes like an irresistible force. Krishna cannot, he cannot combat. You know, if Radharani is so easily obtainable, then Krishna is not, you know, relishing in the same way. Chandravali is very easily obtainable. She's struggling to get Krishna and all these things, and Krishna sometimes shows her a little favor, you know, with great efforts. Chandravali, employing all of her artistry, you know, whatever she has at her disposal, with great effort, she can manage to bring Krishna under her control. And that is to her credit. But just with the mere twitch of the eyebrows, the cupid bow-like eyebrows of Srimati Radharani, Krishna becomes completely devastated. So that is the glory of Srimati Radharani, is that she completely subjugates Krishna in every respect. And although Srimati Radharani is perfect and complete, but nevertheless, her leelas with Krishna are greatly augmented with the help of her sakis and her dasis. Krishna's enjoyment is not mundane. So just as Lalita Devi serves to enhance Krishna's happiness by creating the distance between himself as the enjoyer and his enjoyables, or Srimati Radharani particularly. So similarly, you will find an example in Mukti Charita where Lalita Sakhi is coming between Krishna and Ananga Manjari. When Krishna is trying to approach Ananga Manjari, Lalita Sakhi intercedes for the same purpose, creating the distance. And she'll do also for you. As a matter of fact, we require her assistance. After all, as infinitesimal jivas, How can we withstand the onslaught of the handsomeness, sweetness, and beauty of Lord Krishna? How can we withstand without some help from our friends who are capable of giving us the required assistance, you know, for actually facilitating that, increased value of ourselves in the eyes of Krishna? So, we are also to be enjoyed by Krishna. There's no doubt. We should not be, foolishly misled by any other understanding. There are varieties of enjoyment. As I said, Krishna's enjoyment is not mundane. There's an example in Govinda Lilamrita, just after the water sport pastimes in the midday pastimes at Radhakund. So there's an example of Krishna's transcendental enjoyment when the dasis take their bath in Radhakund and they come out of the water. Sometimes it is described how the fine white cloth, when wet, produces a more enticing and enchanting vision view of the of the Sakhi's beautiful transcendental bodily features, you know, which increases Krishna's happiness when he sees that beauty, which is just an expression of their prema for him. So at that time, when the dasis come out of the water and Krishna can't help but notice their beauty, which far surpasses the beauty even of the Sakhis, the other Sakhis, you know, at that time, Krishna experiences a happiness which is 10 million times the happiness of direct union. And there's other times also when Krishna experiences happiness which far surpasses the happiness of his direct union with Srimati Radharani, simply by seeing her Kila Kinchita Bhav and various other aspects of her dealings with him, which are all varieties of sambhog, which are laced with Vipralamba. So close but so far, so difficult, you know, to achieve. Not so readily available like that, which increases the sweetness of his pleasure pastimes. So like that, an intelligent devotee, you know, who is, disposed to pursue the Madhurya Bhajan of our predecessor acharyas, will certainly know and avail himself to the services of Srimati Lalita Devi. She is our guru, just as Rupa Manjari is our guru, Vishakha is our shiksha guru. We may have many shiksha gurus. We can learn the art of singing like a cuckoo from Vishakha Devi. We can learn the art of dressing and ornamenting the divine couple from Srimati Lalita Devi. So in so many ways, there's so many things that could be said, but there's never any time to say the things that you want to say, which is why I usually don't prefer to give class, because I can never consolidate my ideas in a concise form which will, you know, let's say, prove my wittiness. A fool is undetected until he tries to speak. So, Hare Krishna. Thank you for listening. It's already 10:15. Jai Radhe Shyam, Jai Srimati Lalita Devi, Maharani Ki Jai, Jai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram Ki Jai, Jai Shri Shri Gornitai Ki Jai, Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Go with Premanandi, Hari Hari Bo.